Okay, got to admit something to you. This is probably the hardest assignment I've ever had. Usually when we study scripture, we want to dig deep. Tonight we're doing a 40,000 foot flyover at Mach 4. So, last week we covered the first 18 chapters of Exodus. Tonight we're doing 21, 19 through 40. So it starts out in chapter 19, the nation of Israel comes to Mount Sinai. Okay, so 3 months prior, they left Egypt, and they are being guided through the wilderness. They weren't wandering. They were being guided to this specific spot, to the base of the mountain. Okay, and this mountain really is in what we call modern-day Saudi Arabia. God is reminding Israel of his great power. He says to Moses, when Moses went up to God, and Yahweh called him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." Okay, so God now is going to reveal his plan for the nation of Israel. Okay, therefore you will indeed obey my voice, keep my covenant, and then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. Okay, now we need to understand, we must accept these words. As Peter wrote in his first epistle, you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are a people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Peter is quoting Old Testament scripture. It goes further in that chapter. Okay, God commands that they truly that his holy presence on Mount Sinai is respected. He tell Moses, you tell the people, if you step foot on the base of this mountain, you're dead. If one of you, if you allow some of your livestock to touch the base of the mountain, they're dead. So God was really saying, you cannot come to me any old way you feel like it. You are going to come to me the way I say. Okay, we move on here. God tells Moses to go to the people and set them apart. Well, we see in Leviticus, for I am Yahweh your God, therefore set yourselves apart and be holy, for I am holy. And again, we hear from Peter in his epistle, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. So all this was thousands of years ago, but it applies to us today. God tells Moses to have the people ready on the third day, for he will come down the mountain in the sight of the people. So God's going to come down, and when he does, he terrifies them. Okay, the ground's shaking, thunder, lightning, a loud blast of the trumpet, and the people were shaking in their boots. There was a reason for that. I'm not going to get into it, but one of the things that I want to share with you is this. Back when I studied the tabernacle to teach it on Sunday in Sunday school, okay, I was reading from a Messianic Jewish pastor. So he had a lot of different stuff that we would be interested in or understand. Okay, so now as we move into Exodus chapter 20, he's giving Moses, okay, he's telling Moses what the Ten Commandments are going to be. So we know the first four commandments are vertical, God and man's relationship to each other. When I studied the Ten Commandments, the fifth commandment is unique. Okay, it's a standalone commandment because it deals with the vertical, obey your father and mother as is pleasing to the Lord. But it's also horizontal, so your days may be long and you will prosper. Okay, so we have that cross, that pivot point, that fulcrum, okay? Once we get that right, when we get the up and down right, and we get this fulcrum right, then the last five commandments can be attained. What we're seeing in our country today with just, you know, in our society, with just throwing the first four and the fifth commandment out the window, breaking up the nuclear family, we're seeing our society is just falling apart. So God knew what he was doing there. Exodus 21, 22, and 23. Jack cautioned me, don't go over every one of these because there's about 40 laws that would be given to the judges. You know, some are laws on slavery, bond slaves, responsibility, ownership, borrowing, okay, being good to one another. So that was that chapter. Exodus 24, now we get into what the law tells Moses to gather Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of the Israelites to come up the mountain. Now, as they come up the mountain, everybody else has to stay back. Moses goes up, and he is communing with God. And when God gets done, he says, now Moses wrote down all the things that the Lord had told him, then went back down the mountain. He goes back down the mountain. He built an altar and made peace sacrifices to the Lord. Moses took half the blood from the sacrifice, sprinkled it on the altar. He took the other half and he sprinkled it on the people, signifying that God accepted the sacrifice, and by sprinkling it on the people, he is imputing his acceptance onto the people, preparing the people. Just as today, without Christ sprinkling his blood or shedding his blood on our behalf, we can't come to the Lord. Exodus 25, we move into the supplies and directions for the tabernacle. The Lord said to Moses, speak to the children of Israel that they may bring me an offering. From everyone who will give it willingly with his heart, you shall receive my offering. Okay. Willingly. That means that probably a lot of people didn't contribute. But God doesn't need, you know, our stuff. He wants our heart. That's what he was saying here. Okay. We have a lot of materials that were brought, and it was only the best that the people had to offer, such as gold, silver, bronze, you know, beautiful threads, linens, acacia wood, a lot of different things that were brought to them, but it only had to be their best. So now we move into the instructions. I'm watching the clock here, Jack. The instructions for building the Ark of the Covenant. Basically, this was made out of acacia wood, and it was a box. And it was overlaid with pure gold, hammered gold, one piece. And then on top of the box was what they call the mercy seat. And what it was, he covered the lid with gold, and then two angels, cherubim, facing each other, bowing down. This thing was massive, and it was one piece. It had to be one piece, hammered gold. Only the best. And here's where I found the tabernacle to be so important. And God says to Moses, and there I will meet with you. I will speak with you from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim, which are on the Ark of the Testimony, about everything which I will give you in commandment to the children of Israel. So Moses hasn't even brought the Ten Commandments down, hasn't given the law over to the Israelites, and he's already being told, God is telling him, I'm going to meet you on the mercy seat, and I am going to give you the law. To me, that was just mind-blowing. Then they move on to the instructions of the building of the table of showbread. Now, that actually means bread of face. Okay, the bread was associated with and was to be eaten by the priests in the face of the Lord. So every Sabbath day, the priests would come in, they would eat the showbread that was there, and then new showbread would be brought back in. And they would sit there, signifying that they are communing with God on our behalf. And there were 12 loaves, and each loaf represented one of the tribes of Israel. Then we moved to the lampstand. The lampstand itself was pure gold. Okay? The lampstand shall be of hammered work. The knobs, the branches, the leaves, the fruit that is on this lampstand was one piece, and it was hammered gold. So it wasn't like, okay, you have the middle, and then you bring in six more lamps, and you attach it somehow, weld it or fuse it on. No, this was hammered one piece out of the gold. It is believed that the lampstand weighed about 80 pounds. I did the math, 80 pounds, and today I think gold is going for like $5,000 an ounce. Just the gold was worth over $6.5 million. If you now put it in, make it into the lampstand, okay, it'd be priceless. I don't think there's enough money in the world that could buy this thing. There were seven lamps to it. The tabernacle represented the court of God's throne. And in Revelation chapter 4, verse 5, describes seven lamps of fire were burning before the throne, which are the seven spirits of God. The seven lamps represent the presence of the Holy Spirit in heaven. Now we move into the coverings and the curtains for the tabernacle. Okay, the curtains were made of goat hair. It resembles real fine felt. What they would do is they didn't shave at first. They would cut the wool away down to maybe 3/4 of an inch or so. That hair was still black. Then that would be shaved off and woven into real fine felt. And that's what went on the curtain that separated the holy place from the Holy of Holies. By the way, that curtain was about 60 feet high, about 40 feet long, and anywhere between 9 and 12 inches thick. One piece, no seams. So when Jesus said, "It is finished," and the curtain was torn in two, okay, there was no seam for it to come apart. No person could take a knife and cut through that. So we know that that was an act of God. Then it says, "You shall make coverings for the tent." These coverings were ram skins. Okay, they were now shaved. They were tanned. They were dyed. So it looked like present-day very fine Moroccan leather. And then over the top of that would be what they call badger skins, but the very poor translation. Most believe that he's referring, that's referring to either like a porpoise or manatee, because they are smooth skin, there's no scales, okay? But they are watertight. Water cannot penetrate through them. So now what you have is you have these four layers going over, and then the top layer is this badger skin or porpoise or whatever, okay? And it was so dark inside, the only light came from the lamp, okay? Made for a very tight, warm, cozy, dark interior. So only the light was the one that would give light to it. Then in the court, we have the altar of burnt offering. Okay, now behind the Hebrew word for altar really means the killing place. So this altar was made out of acacia wood, but then it was hammered bronze would envelop this box. And there would be a grate in the middle so the ashes would fall through. On each corner was a horn reaching out to the four corners of the earth. So the gospel is going to all parts of the earth. Okay, the horns represented strength or power. So now you have this, and when they would put the altar, when they would bring the sacrifice, they would stretch it out and tie it to the horns. And then they had the pans that would, or really shovels, pick up the ashes, basins to catch the blood, okay, forks to arrange it and also pull off a portion that would go to the priest that was doing the offering for you, and fire pans. That was, they would take the fire back and forth from this altar to the altar of incense and back and forth. The thing about the bronze is an alloy. It is not pure metal. It's an alloy made out of copper and tin. In those days, it was they used it. This pastor was saying that the implication was death or the ground. Okay, because back then all the implements of war were made out of bronze. So the courtyard. Now we have the courtyard and the gates. I wish I had a PowerPoint that I could put up there because this is fascinating stuff. But this courtyard would be 150 feet long by 75 feet wide. There would be these stanchions or pillars about 7 foot high made out of acacia wood set so many feet apart, and they would just form the perimeter. And then on top of each of these pillars or posts was a silver capstan. And then to connect them was acacia wood rod that was enveloped in hammered silver. Back then, silver has always been referred to for redemption and for also betrayal. Remember, Judas was paid 30 pieces of silver to betray Jesus. So we have that. Then you have the sockets were made out of bronze because these posts did not touch the ground. The bronze sockets touched the ground. Then what they would do is they would drape over. Now, this was one piece, the fence going around, the white cloth fence, linen fence all the way around, except for a small portion in the front, which was the gate. We go all the way around, one piece. And it was about 7 foot high. And the gate now was the only way you could get into the courtyard and have access to the tabernacle. Signifying, God is saying, there's only one way. You can't come to me any other way. You have to come. So now the penitent Israelite would bring his offering to the priest. The priest would have to invite him in. He would come in. They would lift the gate up, the cloth up, and the person would pass underneath. So he's passing underneath, showing submission. Then we're told that they were to get special olive oil. And the way that it was special and perfect was it was not crushed, it was pressed. God did not want pieces of the olive, the pit, or the skin in the oil and then clogging up in the lampstand. That's where most of the oil went, but it was also used for an anointing. We'll see that a little later. It was pressed olive oil. So they would just press it until all the juices would come out. Okay? God uses pressing work in a believer's life. We, like Paul, may be hard-pressed on every side, yet we are not crushed. So God is very clear on that. The garments for the priests. Okay, this was fascinating. You have the garments for the chief priest. He would have a robe. The chief priest would have a blue robe, and there would be pomegranates and bells on it. Then over the top, they called it an ephod. The ephod is similar to an apron, and it would go over the top. And on the shoulder straps of the ephod, they had two beautiful onyx stones, and on each onyx stone was engraved six names of the tribes of Israel. One on each, six on this shoulder, six on this shoulder, signifying that the priest is carrying the weight of the people of Israel. Then you had the breastplate. The breastplate was made out of gold. It was made out, the fine linen. It was made out of, it is all woven together, and we're going to see how that comes together in a minute. To me, it's fascinating. And on it, on this breastplate would be 12 stones, precious stones, in rows of three, four rows of three, 12. And on each of these stones was engraved one of the tribes of Israel, signifying that the priest is holding the tribes of Israel close to his heart. If we don't see Jesus in all this, wow. Then the consecration of the priests. Oh, go back. The everyday priest, not the high priest, but the priest for their everyday, would just have a white tunic. And these were made to order. Each priest, it would be to his size, his height. It was special for him. And when the tunic would either get so soiled with blood or torn, he got a new one. So there were people that's all they did 6 days a week was make these tunics for these priests so they could perform their daily duties. And there's a tradition that says that when the tunic was discarded, it would be torn into strips, and they would use the strips as wicks for the candle, for the lampstand. The consecration of the priests. They were to take one young bull and two rams without blemish. They would slaughter them. They would offer them. They would have unleavened bread and cakes in that ceremony. During the ceremony, the priest that was being dedicated, being consecrated, would eat, showing the significance is that he was communing with God, that he was in communion with God. Aaron and his sons were the first to be consecrated. This is where this would really be humbling. The priest, after Aaron and his sons, and then every priest after him that was being consecrated, would stand in front of the door, not inside, but in front of the door of the holy place, the tabernacle, standing with no clothes on, and Aaron washed them. What a humbling sight that must have been. People could see this going on. That was only one time. After that, the priests would just wash their hands and their feet. Just as Jesus told his disciples, you've been cleaned once, you don't have to, bathe all the time, spiritually. Okay, now what we have is make an altar to burn incense on. This was a box, again, overlaid with one piece, hammered pure gold, and it was set in front of the Ark of the Covenant, separated by the curtain. And all of these, all the arks and whatnot, the ark and the altars had rings put on them where the poles would go through. You can't touch them. We know the story where one guy thought he was doing a great thing, and he touched the ark, and he was killed. Aaron and the chief priest are supposed to make sure that there's incense being burned every morning on the altar of incense. And God was very specific. He said, I have certain formula of incense I want you to use. You do not change. I do not want strange incense. I do not want strange fire. And we know what happened to two guys with the strange fire. Then they make a laver of bronze. Okay, so again, it is acacia wood, laver of bronze, okay, and it would be like a bowl set on a small pillar, and it would be overlaid with bronze. Now, this bronze for this particular article came from all the women who brought in their mirrors, highly polished. So the significance of that is, think of it, here's the priest, he has to wash his hands before he can start doing his duty for whoever is making the offering, okay? He's bent over, he's washing his hands, he sees his reflection in the bronze laver, but he also sees the reflection of the sky above him, signifying you need humility to keep doing this. And that was put between the tabernacle or the a meeting and the altar sacrifice. So they washed their hands every day, every time they had to do one go back and forth. The call of Bezalel and Oholiab. These were two men. God said to Moses, I am calling them. I am going to give them special spiritual insight, knowledge. They are going to be able to do this work, and they're going to be able to train others to do this work. Up until now, nobody could have figured this stuff out. Okay, it was just mind-blowing work that they had to do. It's important, and he tells Moses, and as important as it is to do make this tabernacle, you don't work on the Sabbath. So God really, you know, kept one of his commandments going here. We have the golden calf. So I can just picture what's going on. Moses is up on the mountain talking with God, and God says, Moses, you better get down there. These guys went off the rails again, and you got to straighten them out. So now Moses goes down. He's irate. We know the story. He broke the tablets and whatnot. And now he is getting in Aaron's face. He said, what are you doing? And Aaron said, well, people just brought me some gold, and I threw it in a fire, and a calf came out. You know, it sort of reminds me of Adam and Eve. You know, oh, God, the woman you gave me. So always trying to shuck the blame. Israel's path was restored. You know, God had said, that's it. I'm done with these stiff-necked people. Moses prevailed upon the Lord. The Lord relented. And we know that he did not just abandon the Israelites. So the covenant was renewed. Then in Exodus 35, we see that now the offerings are being brought in. And they had more than they needed, and the story goes that Moses said, "Okay, that's enough. That's enough. That's enough. We don't need more. We don't need more. Just stop." Exodus 36, 37, and 38. Just go through the building of the tent of meeting. 39 is the priestly garments, and Exodus 40 is the completion. That's the last book, the last chapter in Exodus, and God starts with the ark. Then they bring in and set up the table of showbread, then the lamp, then the altar of incense, then the altar of burnt offerings, then the bronze laver. Then they set up the courtyard surrounding the tabernacle. They hang the gate screen. They take the oil and anoint the tabernacle and all its contents. They anoint the altar of burnt offerings. They anoint the laver. They anoint Aaron and his sons by washing them. Then they put on the holy garments on Aaron. Then they anoint and wash Aaron's sons and put the tunics on them. After all of this is done, Moses' job is over. So now what we see at the very end, the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the Shekinah glory of God filled the tabernacle. Moses was not allowed to go into the tent of meeting and be in the presence of the Shekinah glory of God. He was not a priest. He was their leader. There in history, there are only two that are king and priest. One Melchizedek, the other is Jesus, not Moses. So Moses was leading them, but he could not be the priest. So... And then what we know is whenever the cloud moved, the people moved. When the cloud stayed put, the Israelites stayed put. And throughout their journey, the cloud was on the tabernacle by day, and the pillar of fire was on the tabernacle by night. Okay, that brings us to the end of Exodus, and now next week I guess we start Leviticus. Thank you.